Okay.
Okay. One thing I think that we ought to do before all the dust settles with whatever y'all do is we ought to have you ought to really strive to set this estate up so that we avoid probate. And so for example, you know, to the extent that Paul and or Rose still have a checking account or some amount in their name, make sure that it is owned with a pay on death designation or a joint enterprise survivorship or something
POD
like that.
To whom?
To the whoever he wants to get it.
See, have you done that?
Yes, I think so, but I'll need to check that.
And I think it works best if you just put every account to be right of survivorship with the kids, you know, with you two. Now, y'all need to, Paul Jr. and Linda need to realize that if one of you suddenly passes away, then it doesn't work anymore, because now your wife or husband isn't going to get it unless your survivor sibling gives them their half when Paul and Rose pass away.
Because it's only to the two of us.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Another thing is with the cars, if Paul and Rose were both to pass away, and y'all don't have any children by any other marriages, right?
No. No.
These are your only two children.
Right.
Then you all will be able to get the car settled without probating anything. You'll go down to the county auto registration office there in the courthouse and walk in, and you'll need a death certificate for both of them, and say, my mom and dad just passed away, here's the death certificate. You'll need the car title too. We need to change title to this car into our name so we can sell it. And they'll pull out a form, their own little affidavit of heirship form, and they'll have you fill it out and sign it. And they'll send the title and that form. You'll have to pay a fee down to Austin. Austin will send you a title in your two names, and then you can go sell it or whatever, transfer it to each other, do whatever you want to with it. So he's down in Austin, isn't he? You just walk across the street.
This guy, what happens? Because this guy would say, I'll pay you to take those cars.
Oh, okay.
Well, come and get them.
You will need to have figured out something with these non-producing mineral interests, because the only way to transfer real property is either with these life estate deeds or some sort of trust or with a will. And so in order to qualify for Medicaid, at some point we'll need to do something with these non-producing mineral interests. But I really think the whole kernel that we need to get to here is, do we stay with what we got and use the February... if you guys did it before February 6th, we're good.
We didn't. I know it wasn't before.
Well, I mean, you know.
6th was the first day. I think it was the 7th, but it may have been the 6th.
See, we just need to see what those records say. But if we're past that, then we're just going to have to, and I'd have to go check because I haven't had this question in a while, but I really think it is the 6th or after is a bad deal. So, if assuming that you transferred at the 6th or after, then I'm sorry, but we're stuck. And so I think we ought to figure out, what does it look like if we just roll with what we got and make it to the 5-year mark? How much have we lost out of pocket with private pay? And we ought to compare that to, what if we gave everything back and then did the Mason Manor? And you know, I cannot tell by looking at it, but with this amount of money, it wouldn't surprise me if it's better just to leave it alone and roll with it the next 2 years. But I can't tell that by looking. We just need to look at it.
Because
there's a lot
years?
Of money. Well, if you're at 3 years in February of 2009, then we only have two to go. That's what I'm talking about. But remember, it's a maximum 5 years from when the gift was made. So if it was February 7th of 2006, the total of 5 years and apply February of 8th of, what would that be, 2011 or something like that, we're okay.
Yeah. But and we've already been through this, I don't remember the reason, but the March 7 life estate deed didn't reset that clock.
Right, and that would be a minor thing to give back. You could
just
buy that
from him. Just
give
that back, okay.
See, you could actually buy that from him, and he could use some of that money to pay their way. I believe we could. That sounds like a small dollar amount.
Right,
we could
it is.
Figure something out to do with that.
Okay.
I mean, you know, but yes, that that would normally be a problem, but I think we can fix that problem.
Yeah, because the cost of Hilltop is about $60,000 a year plus all the medications.
It'll come near being $560 a day, and then there's plus this that I'm paying the first medication bill, and that's $1,200 for 2 months.
Yeah, but you haven't done that now,
the doctor advised dropping two of those expensive medications. So we're looking at $65,000 a year.
And
now that, you know, as you know, that can appreciate, that can go up some each year, which
it probably will. I don't think that, you know, you got to figure out some inflation in there.
Yeah. So well, you know, the assets in that gift that you made nearly 3 years ago were, you know, $325,000.
So
yours is worth the last sheet. That's $350,000. Now what I kept is in. I'm getting the value has gone down about $25,000 on my little amount, but I'm still getting the same per month. What happened, I've got some Ford and GMC stock, and that's where the big loss is, see.
Yeah.
But they don't think that...
Well, that's not really related.
I just wanted to tell Craig that, so...
Well, you know, I think first priority has to be having Rose where you think she's getting the best care, and I think it's also a priority to have her close to you. And I'm not an expert on local nursing home costs. It is my, gosh, it seems to me normally around here, it's normally around $4,000 a month, and so they're closer to $5,000 a month, and maybe I'm just a little bit behind, I don't think so. So they might be sort of on the high end, and that is one thing you could think about is using a different nursing home that might be a little bit less expensive, you know, but everything is not money, though. The other thing is that, are you a veteran at all?
Mm-hmm.
Did y'all, now again, I don't like this idea for you because it's a drive, and I think it's better for you and Rose if you go see her a lot, but there's that Clyde Cosper nursing home over in Bonham, and in some cases, a veteran's wife can get over there and also have a discount. And it's relatively new as nursing homes go. I mean, it's new to me, but it's probably 10 years old now. But you know, oftentimes the costs are as much as half price. But what I don't like about it is that it's 40 miles away from Paul. And so you know, it may be that the best thing is Gunner, and it's just going to be a little more expensive than normal.
Right.
And we just have to live with it. So
I think the key thing there is how we think the quality of care is.
Yeah,
that's why we went there in the first place.
Good. That's a good reason.
That's
I believe that quality of care is also influenced by how often you're there.
It will be. Right now, it's not quite. She's not really adjusted yet. But
Everything I read says that if you're there every day and they know who gets visited all the time and who doesn't, and they don't want to get people... tweaking at them, and so they
the nursing home, not the patients.
The nursing home, right. So the nursing home, you know, it may not be supposed to be this way, but typically if they, you know, the supervisor is going to make sure that the rooms are cleaner, the ones that are there all the time, and that they're getting fed, and that they're getting their sheets changed, and anyway, that's...
Well, I have friends in church and Sunday school and friends that have had this happen before. And they've tried other nursing homes, and they said that they had problems with all of them until they got them in Hilltop.
And I have heard also that Hilltop has consistently better quality care than other places.
Supposedly their help is slow turnover.
Yeah.
And since I've been there now, they don't, there's a lot of those little ladies in that unit that I never see anyone visiting them. But they clean their rooms. If something happens, they're down there cleaning the rooms. So, but, you know, it's...
we're out of control now, so...
We have 20 minutes, and I may leave slightly earlier to get back to Frisco.
You gotta be, baby.
To prioritize what we're gonna do the rest of the time. I'm sensing we're going to have another get-together.
You know,
so we
if
can
that,
defer some of these questions, perhaps.
If that will help you, y'all will digest what we've talked about. And
can you summarize what you think we need to do, what our go-forward plan of action is here for us?
It sounds to me like we ought to do a Lady Bird deed. It also seems to me that we ought to analyze whether it is better to give everything back and start over, or to stick with what we have and just clean up the 2007 life estate, you know, deed situation. That's what I'm seeing that makes sense that we ought to address.
Okay, so those are the two big things.
That's what I think our big alternatives are that right. make a lot of sense to me.
So the question on here about whether there were supposed to be any other assets in the
trust.
Yeah.
No,
sounds like not.
That's right, because
yeah,
okay. the only reason we did not, a lot of times when people, like if people your age were to come and see an estate planner like me, we might be talking with you about a revocable living trust because it avoids probate and all these good things about it. Well, it's not what you want when you're talking with somebody that might have to use Medicaid.
Right.
The only reason we used that at all was to convert their house yep. into a non-probate asset and try to save the house.
Yeah, and I think that's what you said, Daddy. I think that's what you thought
that's,
all along,
that's,
and I was mistaken about
so
that.
See,
so
we never intended to put anything
okay.
else in the trust.
Okay.
Where that would be different if you did a trust.
Right.
You know, so.
Right. Right.
All the rest of the assets need a different plan than the trust.
Now, is the assumption right that if Daddy preceded Mama in death, is once you get qualified for Medicaid, is there an annual renewal? Is that the way that works? And
okay, that's a good question. They will send a little one-pager annually just to sort of shop and see if anything else has changed, or,
mm-hmm.
but you inherited a bunch of money or something.
Mm-hmm.
But if... I guess the answer to your question is it depends. But we ought to be able to structure it so it wouldn't be an issue. But here's how that would be analyzed, is that if Dad died unexpectedly and he had assets that he left to Mom, Mom would lose her Medicaid and we have a problem. But if Dad has, for example, y'all's stuff in an account with the three of you as right of survivorship, so that anything he has in his name automatically goes to y'all, then it doesn't affect Mom's Medicaid.
But if the accounts are Paul or Rose Gray and he dies, it doesn't go to us, it goes to her.
That's right. So
that's
I don't want accounts to be in Paul and Rose Gray.
Yeah, see that's
a bank account.
Right.
You need to take Rose's name off all but one account. And there needs to be one account that receives Rose's Social Security check, because Social Security is not going to pay Rose's check to an account that does not have
yeah.
Rose's name on it.
Right.
So
yeah.
that account can be Paul, Rose, Paul Jr., and Linda. And that only ought to be in a right of survivorship, okay? Paul Jr., Rose, Linda, right of survivorship. And that account needs to have less than $2,000 in it. So, you know, and by the end of the month, by October 31st to November 1st, you know, end of the month, beginning of the month, midnight, needs to always have less than $2,000 in it. Now, it can have, let's say it has $1,900 in it. Well, on the 3rd, maybe it gets Rose's Social Security. So it goes way above $2,000. That's okay. You use it to pay your bills, light bill, gas bill, whatever, and then that drives it down to less than $2,000 at the end of the month. And so all other accounts, Rose's name should not be on them. But you have to have her name on the one that's going to get Social Security.
Yeah.
Okay, and that the IRA, and you said the annuities too, only have your name on them now, I think, right?
That's the way they're in the book.
That's good. So the money market account needs to have her name taken off too.
Yeah, well, yeah. That comes back. See,
yeah.
we don't use that money market account except to transfer money into the, because it's taking
yeah,
money out.
Yeah, but you don't
of
want
the,
those assets in there for her name.
No, well, it isn't.
Her name's not on it?
It is too, on the money market. Yeah. It is.
Okay, now on the annuities and the IRA and any life insurance, those might have a beneficiary designation. And you may still have Rose as the beneficiary of your IRA.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to be really careful and take Rose off of those beneficiaries. We do not want you to die and leave a bunch of money to Rose. So you want them to be the beneficiary.
That's the only IRA I have.
That's okay.
And it's renewable. I can pull the whole thing out. I think the deadline is 5 more days. Then I pay the penalty. It might pay us me to...
That's okay, Paul. I'm just saying that when you die, there's a beneficiary designation, and you need to make sure that Rose is not the beneficiary. Yeah. Make sure it's Paul Jr. and Linda.
Well, the reason I was saying that is it's a way to pay that $5,000 and something per month. If I take that out, it's only $3,800.
If you want to take it all out and we're done with it, that's fine too. That'll work
well,
too.
Well, I'm
but just, even still, the annuity. Well, now the annuity has been transferred. They're in y'all's name, right?
No.
No.
Oh, I don't think so.
Okay. No, they're in Daddy's name.
No, they're not. There's a.
One of them's big too.
Well, it's $350,000+, and about about $75,000 that is gain.
I was laboring under a wrong assumption. I thought you guys had said that you made all those asset transfers February 7th of 06.
No, just the annuity. Those assets that we transferred are not on this list, period.
It's the $300,000+ investment.
Though. Correct the record then. Some of what I've been saying was wrong. I mean, it's not because I didn't have the right understanding of the facts.
Yeah.
So, okay, well then... Then that what that tells me is that we're going to have to use that sort of candle burning from both ends analysis on the annuities and all that stuff, but that is going to last long enough, I believe, to protect the monies they transferred to you February 7th. Okay, so I really think that those assets are probably going to end up being safe because we got enough still left in their name because one of those annuities is like $360,000.
Yeah, right.
Okay, well then that the only way to deal with those is going to be that, you know, I'll call it the candle burning both ends approach.
And that's the one
I thought you
which option is that?
Number 2. Well, there were two options. One is stay as is, and the second one was using the candle burning technique.
Which was we give it all back and then
Yeah.
So that's the one you think is the probably
going to have to. Yeah, the stay as is, I thought you guys I misunderstood.
Yeah.
I thought that all the assets had been transferred to y'all and that it was just done February 7th.
No, the assets that were transferred to us aren't even on this list.
Okay. Well, then things change. So
Good things came up.
Okay, well then the only thing we can analyze is we don't have to give them back in either, do we? See, if you never gave them, then we don't have to have y'all giving them back. They're still there.
Right.
We just have him give them. Now, I need you to find out, I mean, Paul or Linda, any of you know, how long have you owned those two annuities?
That was rolled over.
When did you buy them?
They were 5-year annuities, and I paid $250,000. And it's been rolled over 2 or 3 years, so it's 7 or 8 years old.
Okay, well, if you bought them for $250,000 and they're now worth $363,000, that tells me there's a bunch of
income tax
deferred income in there, and if you give them to the kids. It's very likely that suddenly that deferred income is taxable, and there could be current income taxes. Now, the easiest way to find, the quickest way to find out is to call the annuity company, and you're likely going to have Paul right there with you on the phone, and they'll ask you your birthday or your Social Security number or whatever, and then if you say, okay, now I'm going to hand the phone to my son or daughter, and they got some questions for you, and I want you to answer them, well, then they'll talk to you. But they probably won't call. So, excuse me, anyway, you ought to call them up and say, if we were to cash this in right now, what would our taxable income be? And that's a number we need to know. And then secondly, Paul ought to say, if I wanted to give this annuity to my son and daughter, Can I give it to him in kind, or is it going to be treated as a taxable distribution, which would cause income tax consequences? So, and I guess another way to look at that is just realize that that's not really a $363,000 annuity. It has to bear its income taxes on the appreciation.
Right.
So it's
right,
really,
exactly.
As we sit here, maybe a $320,000 annuity.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, so because someday it's going to bear those taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I saw a headline. I didn't read the article in the last 6 months, and said that the IRS loves annuities.
Yeah, that's right.
Can I ask two quick questions?
Sure.
Three, actually. Number one. Didn't Craig, you do the will for us, and what's in it?
There is no will.
No.
Oh, there is no will? I thought
there wasn't going to be a will.
Well, yeah, we weren't going to.
Okay.
We were going to go with the trust.
I think that I suspect you still have an old will, and it's probably fine as an emergency.
I don't think we've ever had a will.
No.
Well, that must have been the plan never to have one. So, I oftentimes do. We call them pour-over wills, but I suspect in order to try to save costs, we cut that out, you know, because...
Yeah, I think I thought the strategy was to avoid it.
Which is why I thought all those assets were in the trust, see?
I didn't remember at all, so that's why I asked the question.
Yeah.
I did not do a will.
Okay, there is none.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, I do a durable financial, durable statutory power of attorney. A property power of attorney, and I didn't do one here, which again tells me that I bet you must have one already that you're...
No,
I don't.
That's what you were asking
we don't have a will.
No, I'm talking about power of attorney.
Not a medical power of attorney.
Well, now...
You've got that.
But now, what about Rose? She's incompetent to do anything.
Well, then it's too late for her to do a power of attorney, but I mean, I think you ought to have one.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I always offer to do a power of attorney. I think
right.
it's an important document. The
yeah.
fact we don't have one here, I suspect that you guys didn't want me to do one, because I always
don't
do it.
We don't have one at all?
Well, I mean,
no.
I didn't do one.
Well, then we
I don't have one.
Yeah, right. So
you're the only person we've been to for estate planning and will. Okay.
It's really surprising. I am just absolutely certain.
And
that
I'm trying to wrap us up at 4:30 because you have an appointment, or you did the other day.
Yeah.
The other thing, the Medicaid application, what's your recommendation on whether we try to do that or you do it? Is it complex enough that we should have you do it, or should we invest the time to figure it out and do it ourselves, or is it fairly easy to do?
Here's what I like people to do on there. The most of it is information that I asked you when you first came in, listing all your assets, your name and address, your income, Social Security, whatever, what's yours, what's Rose's, and have you ever made any gifts before? If so, when and to whom and how much? I ask people to go get the application, and it's over here on Loy Lake. Okay, is the
or online?
Okay, well, if you're gonna get one online, be sure you're getting the one for people who are over 65 who are gonna apply for assistance with nursing home, because there is a Medicaid for folks that are under 65 that just don't have
right.
any money,
right.
and you don't
yep.
want that one. They're different.
Yeah.
So you're looking for the over 65 nursing home Medicaid application. You can get it online, and what I ask people to do is make a photocopy of it, and then fill out the photocopy in pencil, and then come talk to me about it. Let me review it with you. It won't take long.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go over it, and then because I want to make sure that, to my knowledge, everything is disclosed, filled out correctly. And if especially the transfers,
mm-hmm.
Because none of us want to commit Medicaid fraud and hide anything.
That's
we
right.
want to disclose it all. However, they are only entitled to know what they are entitled to know, and we don't have to volunteer anything, and I don't want you to volunteer anything. So that's what I like to review them,
mm-hmm.
And we make corrections, and then whenever we're happy with it, then you go back and recopy it.
Mm-hmm.
Onto one, and then hand it in. Now, when you hand it in, it's very important for you to have and keep a copy.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot trust a government entity.
Right.
They are not, they're there, when you're dealing with a government entity, their idea is that you are trying to get their money, and they are protecting the rest of us as taxpayers.
Right.
So they are not here to help you.
Well,
so you need to keep a copy, and what, let me just real quick.
Sure.
You want to make, when you walk in and hand it in, you give them the original, and then you say, okay, you sign and you date my copy, and you keep the record with her initials on it, or his, that you handed it in on that day. Because I've had them say, oh, we lost it. And the client luckily says, that's it right there on your desk. So, and you know, with your IRS tax return, you always send it certified. Do
right.
not mail it.
Exactly.
So.
The Hilltop, the people there have a specific person that
that's right.
handles all of their, and they think this person's great. I'm not sure.
You remember that person's name by chance?
John.
I have it in the car. I have it in the car.
The administrator?
It's a man.
No,
it's
not a man.
They're Medicaid.
It's Medicaid, it's state.
What scares on you is that
it's the state.
I don't know then.
The way the case, the Medicaid, what do they call them? Case agent or whatever.
Yeah, I forgot the name.
They have that person is assigned to each nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
So one benefits agent or whatever might have two or three nursing homes, but those are the only ones they work on, and they don't do them for all over. So they have one that they consistently work with, and
yes,
and I know a lot of their names, and you know.
I'll email that to you because
okay.
I've got the person's name. But that person is working for the state. I don't want that.
Exactly.
I don't want to be asking that person questions about stuff because I don't want to divulge
it. It's a little bit like asking the IRS to help you with your tax return.
Yeah, right.
Is that they're not going to tell you about all these strategies we've
exactly.
talked about today.
Yeah.
They're not going to tell you about labor. Deal,
right.
You know.
Right.
Okay. The last question I have is, I think we know what we need to do. And I've taken notes and so forth. They're accurate. Is there anything you're going to need to do, or do you need information for us to proceed with the ladybird?
The ladybird deed, I have your legal description, and I can do that. You know, I charge $700 to do the ladybird deed, and I'll be happy to do that. We also need a little deed that I charge $154 to deed it out of the living trust, out of the revocable trust, back to Paul and Rose. And then, now can Rose still sign?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let me make a suggestion here. Once a person is mentally incapacitated, the technically correct thing to do is to have that person put under a guardianship. Well, you know, if we have a family, if we have a person that's even beginning to become incompetent or questionable, and we have a family that's getting along, the kids all get along, like each other, trust each other, you know, then I think it's better to avoid that guardianship. Because
mm-hmm.
a guardianship is $3,000 or $4,000, it's expensive, it's going to be another $1,000 every year doing an annual accounting. I mean, it's a money-making deal for lawyers.
Yeah, right.
I try to avoid them. A power of attorney is a $250 way to avoid it. If we haven't done a power of attorney, we ought to do a power of attorney. Now, what you'll need is you will need a friend of the family or somebody who is a notary who can go with you to notarize Rose's signature in the nursing home. But if Rose can still sign, we ought to do a power of attorney because Paul's going to need that to do these deeds, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And we ought to do that post-haste.
One of the questions down here toward
right.
the end. What do we do if she's, you know,
I don't,
incompetent?
I mean, I try. There are lawyers around here that just hop to a guardianship. But once you do a guardianship, you can't do any of this Medicaid planning because now a court is supervising it.
Mm-hmm.
And the court's idea is that we'll need all this money to pay for Rose.
Mm-hmm.
We can't take the chance that Medicaid might, that y'all might go run out spending in Las Vegas
mm-hmm.
and Medicaid might change the law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
All right.
So I think we've got to do a power of attorney.
All right. Am I right in saying we want to do the ladybird trust, as it's called, or
it's
whatever.
Just a deed. It's a
ladybird
deed.
Ladybird
deed.
Dad.
Well, that's what's recommended, isn't it?
Yeah. That's what I'm hearing.
What
you
about
agree?
You?
Yeah. I don't know that there's an option.
I that's if you were my dad, I'd say we need to do a ladybird deed. It works.
That's what we're here for.
It protects the property. And
that's what we're here for.
Right.
And is this power of attorney, do you need two of those or just one?
Well, I could do two, but and if I do those, I charge $200 a piece for them. But if I do a joint power of attorney, mm-hmm. it's going to have a paragraph that say, I, Paul, appoint whoever to mm-hmm. be my attorney in fact, and then whoever to be the successor mm-hmm. if the first one dies.
Right.
And then it's going to be paragraph, I, Rose, mm-hmm. appoint Paul to be my attorney in fact, and if Paul can't do it, then mm-hmm. one of the kids and then the other kid. So mm-hmm. I do
you can
a joint
do one.
Power yeah. of attorney that okay. that way, and then I just charge $250 for that.
I feel like they have a notary in Hilltop. Would it be all right when this is done for her to sign in front of that if they have a notary down there?
Yeah.
Any notary, in other words, should.
Need to,
yeah, any notary.
Just make sure that you just need to. Sure. I mean, it's. Yeah, that's what I was trying to suggest is that to get a local notary.
Yeah. Well, they're not. That doctor today didn't recommend taking her out of there, really.
Well,
he thought that it hurt. Is that what you got? Unnecessarily.
Well, no. I thought what he was talking about was my interpretation of what he was talking about was a circumstance where she had had a heart attack.
Uh-oh.
And trying to do.